hopefully you personally believe that your idea is a pretty fantastic idea. Because if you don't believe that, then it probably doesn't make sense for you to pursue it.
These are originally live chat sessions that I held, and you can join them in the future every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST on sales.n.pixels on Instagram. My name is Koji, and this is Sales and Pixels.
My guest today is Aditi Malial. She's a partner at Upfront Ventures. She's also an investor at Chime, Power to Fly, and BetterUp. She has a very interesting take on what products will move the needle towards the future of work. I'm sure you will enjoy hearing and learning more about how VCs and investors evaluate the pitch and the potential impact in the market. So I'm very excited to have Aditi today. Hi, Aditi.
Thanks, Koji. I'm excited to be here.
Explain to a novice like me, how is your daily job as a partner at Upfront?
I think everyone probably has a different answer to this. So my answer is more specific, I guess, to my interests as well as where I spend my time. So my day at Upfront typically involves a couple of different things. So I'll start with one of the first things that I do is take a lot of meetings with entrepreneurs. So that's a big part of my day. I would say probably 30% of my day or 40% of my day is taking 30 to 45 to maybe 1 hour meetings with entrepreneurs. They could either be a first meeting, and this is maybe the first time that I'm interacting with that founder, or it could be a second meeting where I have a list of follow-up questions and we're doing diligence into their business and getting to learn some more things about them. So I would say that's probably 30 to 40% of my day. The other 60% of my day is split between a couple different things. I would say the first part is probably spending a decent amount of time synthesizing and sort of processing the information that I've gotten from the company meetings that I've taken. So whether it is, looking at their financial model, if they happen to have one, or whether it's starting to do references on the founders and the ecosystem that they're in, or starting to understand the competitive landscape as well. That's probably a certain amount of like thinking and processing time. And then of course, there's a decent amount of time where I am dealing with emails, which I think we all spend a bunch of time doing. I also do quite a bit of outbound. So, I'll reach out to founders who maybe I've read about, or I've heard about their company, or I'm, interacted with them on some social media platform and think what they're building is pretty unique. And then I do like to keep some part of my day to just writing a little bit, whether it's writing a memo to myself on some of the things I learned in the day, or whether it's sort of writing a couple of sentences down on a theme that I'm thinking about. And so I, as a venture capitalist, specifically spend quite a bit of time actually in looking at companies that are financial technology businesses, so fintech companies. And then I spend a decent amount of time now looking at some companies, obviously in the future of work. You mentioned that I had invested in BetterUp, and then also looking at some companies in the digital health space. So looking at mental health, women's health, family health, sort of companies around that category too. So the founders and the companies that I spend time with are companies usually in some of those categories.
Mm-hmm. I guess that probably includes a lot of desk research on understanding what the landscape is. And
yeah, there's definitely a bunch of that. And there's, quite a bit of reading. I would say towards the end of my day, I'll spend time on my computer as I'm going through emails or kind of going through work that I, or going through content that I might have read or seen on my come through via blogs or newsletters. I'll just put them, I'll open them in my Chrome tab and sort of remind myself that I need to come back to reading them at the end of the day. So I would say there's definitely quite a bit of research involved in my work. And then I would say the stage at which I invest in companies. So I'm a seed investor mostly, and I do a little bit of Series A investing as well. I really do make investment decisions based on people. And so I do use the opportunity when I'm doing research on a market to also do research on the founders that I'm reaching out to or people that I'm looking to partner with. it's interesting because obviously LinkedIn is a good source of research or finding out, I think, the headlines on people's lives. But to really understand how they're thinking, I've been sort of spending time on Medium or looking at things that they're tweeting about. If they have open Instagram profiles, it's a good opportunity to kind of go and dive into getting to know them. So this is usually when I'm starting to get to know founders, probably at a deeper level. Those are things that definitely play a role in doing research on them and knowing more about the way they think and the way they make decisions.
Interesting. That helps a lot to paint the picture. And I'm kind of using this a lot, especially today for me, as like understanding a little bit about, VC and this whole new world about startups that I, you know, definitely was very distant at Google. I'm curious about one thing. Like, a lot of people reach me and say like, hey, I have this crazy idea. I have like a most brilliant idea, or have the perfect pitch. I know you have a lot of feedback for that. Like, do you think that's the most important thing? Like, to have a very like awesome idea?
So I think that there are a couple of things. Obviously, you personally would believe, hopefully you personally believe that your idea is a pretty fantastic idea. Because if you don't believe that, then it probably doesn't make sense for you to pursue it. So I would say the conviction that you have in the idea, or that a founder has in their idea, is definitely something that's necessary. It's almost like it's table stakes, right? But after that, I think what makes it, what's actually pretty important in a pitch is being able to describe why you believe that it's a really big market, and being able to describe why there's a specific pain point or a specific way by which you're addressing this pain point. I think oftentimes people believe, like, so I'll give the example where there are companies that are starting, there have obviously been search businesses, for example, that have started after Google, and there were search businesses that started before Google, but there was something unique with the way by which Google did it, and the ease by which they allowed people to just enter whatever question they may have or any search topic they may have into a very simple search bar. And the simplicity of the experience was actually a really big hook to get users to come and use the product and to simplify what could have been very complicated. I think other search engines used categories, or like you had to go specifically search within, if you were looking up like an animal, you had to specifically go within like an animal category to then go and search for that animal. So it sort of created a lot of friction for the user to then go and go to then go into an experience. And so especially when starting companies, I think the biggest thing to be able to describe to a venture capitalist is like why your market is a really big market, and why the product strategy that you have taken is a low friction, unique hook, which maybe others have done before, but there's a reason why you believe the strategy by which you're going to take it, by go about doing it, is probably going to be unique. So I think the feature hook is like so important, and the method by which you are differentiating is really important. I think building companies in competitive markets is probably, I think of it as a good sign. I think it's validating that people, that your market is a really big market. There's so many people trying to solve it. And yes, at the same time, there's so many people trying to solve it, and maybe it hasn't been solved already. So to me, it's like opportunity to create something that's truly unique. But the way you go about doing it and execution is probably, that's something that I really care about. And that's something that like you as a, that's something that me as a VC, or, you know, other people as venture capitalists have to determine whether they believe the entrepreneur will be able to execute or not.
Mm-hmm. So it seems that the people aspect of it, the team aspect of it, it plays a big role in your decision-making, right? How much of the team influences on your decisions when you're looking for investing in a specific company?
Yeah, I would say team is probably 50% of my decision in terms of when I'm deciding whether to go forward in diligence, and then even deciding whether I want to invest in the company or not. So in my decision-making rubric, 50% of it would be allocated to my connection with the team, the way I think that the team, my belief in the team and their capabilities to execute, and then my belief in the impact and the relationship that the two of us can have, or myself, the founders and I can have to truly make a difference in their experience. If I believe that a founder is just looking for money, there are probably plenty of VCs who are willing to just give money. But I like to think of myself as a founder, as a VC who's going to be relatively high touch and pretty involved with the business, especially the stage at which I invest. And so I think of that as a pretty positive thing to look for that connection and see the development of the relationship.
Right. And maybe connecting with that, I know you have product management background too. Like you came from VC and then you had this experience at Google and now you're back to VC. I'm curious about how do you think that experience as a product manager influences your perspective today?
Yeah, it's fun because we got to work together when I was a product manager. That was actually a pretty fun part of the experience. So I would say, especially at the early stages of a company, they are very much, a lot of times the companies that I meet or the founders that I spend time with have an idea and have a pretty good sense of how they're going to go about building it. Sometimes they've built a prototype. Sometimes they have a little bit of traction. Sometimes they don't even have a prototype, but they have a vision and they know what they're going to do. And so the product background in a lot of ways does help me to think about it. I use a lot of the stuff that we talked about. So thinking about research, for example, sometimes if founders have never actually talked to users, it's a big red flag for me. Because I think sometimes we've come... Yes, still happens. And so I think like, and there's also the question of like, how much research is enough research to know when you've built enough of a case as to why you're going to do something or build something. And so I always push founders to do more and to continue to listen to the user voice. We used to talk about this at Files by Google a lot, right? Which is the user voice. And I think, especially in the beginning when building out the product roadmap, I think a lot about I've thought a lot about this, which is like the relentless focus on the user experience, or whether it's a B2B company or B2C or B2B2C, it's also the relentless focus on the customer journey. So I think the focus on the user journey and the focus on the customer journey is so important. And that was something that I learned as being a PM at Google. And that's something that like I bring a lot to the conversations that I have with very early stage companies, is trying to spend time with the trying to push the founders to continue to listen to the user voice and hopefully help that to make decisions on what type of features to build, whether one feature is working or it's not working, test, iterate. If it's not working, move on. So those are some of the principles of product management that I do think I can bring to a company at a pretty early stage. And then I would say, on top of that, I think having been a PM on a product that, you know, we saw it obviously launch to grow into the tens of millions of users that we did have on Files by Google, one of the big things that it is exciting to see is like the different paths by which we took for adoption. So user adoption, we were obviously building a consumer-facing product, but user adoption can come through, whether it's through, you know, we had OEM partnerships, or whether it's through business development, whether it's through organic market, paid marketing, or which different intentional channels we took. That was something I remembered a lot from my experience at Google, especially on Files by Google. And so that's something that with some of the consumer-facing products that I do work with, it's definitely a part that I bring into the conversation and the discussion with the founders. And so I like to think that having had the product management experience really has benefited me as an early stage investor.
Right, that makes sense. And I think like it's usually common that founders just think about one source of a user acquisition, like having this more like broader perspective on user acquisition and think about like multiple channels. I think that makes a lot of sense. All right. I know you may listen to a lot of pitches, and I think it's probably like a very common question, but like, what do you think it makes a strong pitch, a strong story when you're looking at, let's say, 10 different ones? Which one, when there's one that you feel like this is the one, like what usually the aspects of the one that is stronger comes to your mind?
Yeah, so I think, so we briefly touched upon this, but one, I definitely want to see conviction that the founders have in the idea. So I think really being convinced that you know why you're doing this and why you're excited about it and why it's a big market is incredibly important to sort of start the conversation. Your enthusiasm and energy is always something I gauge. Like if you come in high energy with a lot of enthusiasm, it's probably going to go off a little bit better than if you come in sort of morose and not very positive about what you're going to be spending time talking to me about. So I'd say that's just like the starting point. Then I think the big thing that I think about, especially with a successful pitch, is being able to explain. So I would almost assume that the VC has, even if the VC says they're an expert in your category, I would assume that they don't actually know that much. Like, treat it with, go back to fundamentals, explain why this is a market that is interesting. Say, for example, you know, hourly wages, like helping hourly workers get paid daily. Make it really simple. Why do hourly workers wait 2 weeks to get paid? Why couldn't they get paid every day? Why is that important? Especially in the time that we're in, why is this a big category that we should be spending time in? So I think starting off by keeping it really simple is very important. I would also say recognize that, like, you may have 30 minutes, you may have 45 minutes, or you may have 60 minutes. Use probably 60 to 70% of that time going through the pitch, but also remember that 30% of the time needs to be somewhat conversational. If I'm just having a founder pitch at me for 30 minutes, and then at the end they're like, oh, look, it's, you know, we have, our 30 minutes are up, and now, you know, you have to go and you had no time to get to know me, it's pretty challenging for us to have formed a relationship or any kind of connection in that conversation, which I think is somewhat challenging to then assume that I'm going to go and put money into this company if I just had a 30-minute like lecture told to me. So I think remembering that you want to form a connection with the founder, with the VC. And if during the pitch you find that maybe they're distracted or maybe they haven't asked as many questions, slow it down a little bit. Don't use it as a time to like suddenly pick up the pace and get frazzled. I would almost use it as the time to slow it down a little bit, take a step back, pause, and be like, hey, do you happen to have any questions? Or does this make sense? Or can I repeat any of this? Because oftentimes, if you're going too fast, someone's probably switched off and has decided we're probably not that interested. So I would say that's more on tactically. And then obviously we just talked about the market. And I think then being able to show like truly how you believe you're going to be able to execute on this idea and why you've put the strong team together that you're working with and why you believe that this team is the right team. They're the right founders, or they're your right co-founders, and they have, you know, the right backgrounds. So for example, if somebody who, I don't know, is coming from the financial services space and then is going to start a fintech company, makes sense. Sometimes people who come from a very different category, like maybe they come from the media space and they're starting a company in fintech. Sure, it's not directly related, but show me the correlation. Tell me why you believe that your background is relevant to what you're going to do. Bring out the common skill sets of what you did in your previous experiences and your co-founders in their previous experiences to what they're going to do in their role as co-founders of, you know, a financial services company or a healthcare company. So I would say that those parts of the conversation and the pitch are really important to me. And then I can't hammer this in enough. Definitely use the time to build a relationship with the founder, with the VC. Because if you don't actually build a relationship with the venture capitalist through the conversation, it's unlikely that they're going to be that engaged to want to support you when they're talking to their partners to try to make a decision whether they should continue to do more work and more diligence. So that's pretty important to me, especially.
Mm-hmm. Okay, totally noob question. Let's say I have an idea. I want to create this new product. I have zero people in my team right now. Is this still a good time to look for founding, or should I build a team first? Or what is the, you know, in terms of stages What is the stage that I need to be in order to get to talk with VCs?
That's a great question. It's actually one that I think about a lot, because when you talk to VCs, you obviously get... So I think that the question you need to ask yourself is a few things. One, when you talk to VCs, you're obviously going to get advice. Whether it's advice you want to take or advice you don't want to take, it's up to you. But venture capitalists will give you advice, most likely, unless you're explicit with them and say, like, hey, you're just a user who's testing my product, and that's why I want to engage with you. So I would say that's something that, as a founder, I highly recommend people to take the time to think about, is like, are they looking for advice? Are they looking for a conversation? Or are they looking to meet other people? So knowing what your intention is when going into a conversation with a VC helps to decide whether, like, how you want to actually use their time. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think when you're deciding to raise venture capital dollars, you need to remember that you're also giving up ownership to your company, right? So if your company is still super early and just in ideation phase, it may not necessarily be the right time to give up 10, 15, 20% of your company just while you're ideating. And so I would say that's probably a pretty big factor that people want to consider. So say you decide to raise $1 million or $2 million, you may end up deciding, like, I'm going to raise it at a pretty high on a YC safe or on like a note and not give up too much of my company. But still, unless you really need the capital, say, for example, you need the capital to go hire a co-founder, or you need the capital to go hire your first engineering team and you don't necessarily think you have that, I would say it's pretty important at that point to make the decision to sort of stay on your own, focus on ideating, try to meet as many people as you can, talk to VCs, use them as sort of sparring partners, or use them as people who could maybe introduce you to other potential co-founders. But I would say that's primarily the reason at the stage at which you are, if you're just an idea and no team, that's probably the best way to use your time. I wouldn't recommend going and raising venture dollars then. What some people do is they do maybe go and raise a friends and family round. So maybe just get some capital from friends and say, like, hey, I'm, you know, yeah, exactly. It's real. I've left my company. I'm starting to build something. But I would say VC dollars, obviously, it'll get harder if you raise venture dollars. There's also the undue pressure that you now have to hit milestones and you have to get certain places, because, you know, someone who's not just your best friend or a couple of group of people are investing in you. So I would say at the stage of just an idea and just you, use the time to ideate, almost go on an exploration. Don't force yourself to go and raise venture dollars.
That makes sense. All right. So was listening to your podcast at Upfront Ventures, and I heard you talking about, like, future of work, and, you know, likewise for me, I also work at Google. We know there's a lot of tools there that they have zero interest on building outside Google. I'm curious about, you know, the moment we're living right now, most of people working from home. What are the biggest opportunities from your point of view on that field, like thinking about future of work, remote work, and all of that area?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, I think everyone probably talks about, obviously, the tools that we use on a daily basis. So whether it's Google Hangouts or Zoom or, you know, some of the other products there, obviously, those are pretty important, because at the baseline, communication is incredibly important. Then there's the collaboration documents, right? Whether we're collaborating on Google Docs or on Notion or Roam or whatever it may be, we're using a variety of different collaborative spaces. One thing I've been thinking a lot about is, like, work is not just about the productivity on a computer or productivity necessarily in a brainstorming session. I think one thing that is actually quite interesting is some of the social conversations and some of the non, I would say it can be work related, but it's a little less with intention. It's more casual. It's more, we're spending time together. You know, we met at the micro kitchen and we're just getting a coffee and we're starting to talk about something related to work and it leads us into talking about something else. So I don't know. That's something that I think a lot about is like, is there a space for socialization or like random conversations? Now, obviously, it's hard to build a tool for random conversations because we build a lot of stuff for intention and not necessarily for the randomness. And I don't know if it's a venture-backed business, but I do think a lot about creating space for creative thought or creative discussions that don't necessarily have to result in the outcome of like a bullet-pointed list or something very tangible. So that's something I think about, whether it is a platform or, you know, whether it's like a video hang space, whether it's like a collaborative whiteboard and, you know, you're throwing ideas out there, whether it's like hopping into a rotation of games or something like that. So that's something I think a lot about, because I think burnout has been getting really high because, you know, we sit at our computers the Zoom fatigue is real. And we sit at our computers, what, 9 to 9, 9 to 10, 9 to 1, like 8 to 1, whoever knows. It's long days, right? So how do you cut the fatigue a little bit? The other thing I've been thinking a lot about is, so we obviously talk again about fatigue because we're in these meetings all day. And so there isn't enough, people have to create space for thinking time. But sometimes I think a lot about like accountability for thinking. So say, for example, like I need to get a blog post out and I just need to sit down and write the blog post. Sometimes what ends up happening is you sort of just keep putting it at the back of your mind. You're like, yes, I'll get it done. I'll get it done. It's on the to-do list. But your meeting is filling up with the Zoom meetings and your meeting is filling up with all kinds of other things. And before you know it, you're exhausted at the end of the day. And so one thing I've been thinking of a decent amount about is the idea of these accountability products. So basically like some way where like you could get paired with somebody that you work with. It doesn't necessarily have to be someone who's going to help you work on a project. It could be just somebody who's like your accountability buddy, like in a completely different part of your organization, and just say like, hey, for the next 1 hour, we're setting intention that we're both going to work on this. Like I'm going to work on this and you're going to work on that. And we're just going to make sure that each other is working. It's sort of the way that I used to go to the library with my friends when we used to study in college together, right? Or like if I was at Google and we were working together, I'd be like, hey guys, can we just get together and can like one or two of us just get into a conference room and try to get this one thing done? Or I need to get this done. You need to get that done. Let's just check back in like an hour. So I think that's something that there's something about accountability and building a tool around, or whether it's a platform, whether it's a tool. And I've seen a few companies in the space and it's actually quite interesting to feel accountable for some of the work that you're doing. So I would say that's the other thing. And then I would say the last thing that Google did a great job building was this product. Obviously, we used MoMA a ton, which for people who don't know what MoMA is an internal product that Google built, which is basically internal search. So it's like a wiki where you could literally ask anything. And I think today there could not be a higher need for MoMA across companies than ever before. And people are building internal wikis in all different ways. But for example, like companies' policies on work from home, on, you know, what does leave look like? Like, what does sick leave look like? All these things are constantly changing. And so you may get emails, you may get notifications, but your inbox is also a little bit of a disaster sometimes, right? And so like you have to go and search, like, what is our updated paternal leave or maternal leave? And like, what is our updated policy on like, you know, how to handle like emergencies and stuff like that. And like, where does our insurance sit? Like, how do we get access? So building these internal wikis today could not be more important. And I think what ends up happening is information sits within people. So like people are holders of a lot of information. So it's also siloed. So there are a couple of companies that are trying to do this. And I think people are doing it more for like external wikis, so like having general content out there, but I think internal wikis are incredibly important right now, and so that's something that I've been thinking a lot about and talking to a few companies in that space actually.
Wow, awesome. It's great. Like, I think you gave like gold to people here today because you gave so many great ideas. Like, one is this tool for Halloween conversations, which I think it's exactly where many of those super creative products are, you know, where they start is on those Halloween conversations. Second is this accountability tool that helps teams to really like make them accountable on the things they're, you know, supposed to work on. And then the last one is the wiki platform. So I really appreciate that you're sharing all of this with us today. This is our gold. I do have something here that I want to show you. It's a picture, and I want you to comment about this picture.
Oh my gosh. Okay. First of all, my arm looks so ripped in that photo. That is a very flattering photo of me.
Sorry about that. It was published publicly.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I was definitely in my prime of peak athleticism in that photo. So that photo is from when I was in college squad. Yes, definitely exposed. That was when I was a college athlete at Stanford, and I played squash I was recruited actually from Singapore to come to the US to play squash. And that photo, I think, was from my senior year when I was playing against, I think, Trinity College. I remember my opponent. She was awesome. And playing college squash was like a huge part of my undergraduate experience. So my senior year, I was captain, and it was great. I mean, my days were very structured. College was very, very structured for me. I would say the structure was in the mornings I would have classes. So I never really took afternoon classes. All my classes were probably until 3. And then after 3, my class, I would go into practice, and we'd have 2.5 hours to 3 hours of practice. And then dinner, library, bed, wake up, practice, classes, practice, bed. So it was like, there was just like routine, which I really liked the structure of it. Squash was a huge part of my college experience. My best friends are from the squash team. We were a team of 12 to 15 girls, depending on the year. And unfortunately, Stanford Squash has now, Stanford Squash is no longer going to be funded by Stanford, which is kind of a bummer. It's no longer a varsity sport at Stanford, and it's no longer going to be supported by the institution just because of funding cuts that they've had to do. So that's definitely been a huge bummer. Yeah, because I mean, it was one of the big reasons I came to college in the US. You know, we're trying to figure out ways that we can support players in every other way. But yes, that is where that pretty exposing photo of me is from, which is on the internet. So it's great.
I just want to talk a little bit more about sports.
Yes.
One, because I really like cycling. And the second is because I also noticed that in some interviews, you talk about this project called Added Sports. And I would love to hear a little bit more about it, like how you decided to start this and, you know, what's the actual support that you're providing to professionals?
Yeah, so actually Added Sport is, first of all, on the cycling point, I just got a road bike. So I've recently gotten into cycling as well. Yes. And we also got a Peloton during this period of time. So we're really double downing on the whole cycling thing, but it's great to cycle outside. On Added
Sport,
you're
in the perfect place for cycling for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love that part of being in California. So Added Sport is actually a company that my brother runs full time. So I have a twin brother. He lives in Singapore. His name's Akshay Maliwal.
Twin brother.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And he lives in Singapore, and he calls me the co-founder, but he runs the business full time. And so what Added Sport is my brother and I were both recruited to play college sport in the US. So he played golf at Berkeley and I played squash at Stanford. And it's pretty hard to get recruited as an athlete, as an international athlete, by US colleges. Coaches don't know who you're not on the coach's radar. Coaches are going to local tournaments in the US. They're not flying to, and you're from Brazil, like they're not flying to Brazil. They're not flying to Singapore to see players play there.
No NBU because, research.
Yeah, no NBU research. Exactly. There's just a ton of those athletes already in the US. And so when my brother and I graduated from college, we both kind of started talking about the fact that college sport was such a big part of our experience at college, that we hope that other people from Singapore and from India and from Southeast Asia would be able to enjoy that when they came to college too. And so my brother and I started talking about it, and basically we came up with this idea to help high school athletes get into colleges to play sport. So in a lot of countries, and even in the US, there are these businesses that are basically college recruiting businesses. And so they help high school students. They, you know, think of like how to write better essays, like what are the right things to say, how to get into the right schools based on your SAT scores and your academic scores and stuff like that. And so my brother and I started a business called Added Sport, which basically helps athletes who are high performers in specific sports. So we cover a whole bunch of sports, but, you know, it's like golf, tennis, squash, soccer, swimming, running, track and field, a whole variety of them. And basically, if they're high performers in those categories, how do they get recruited by coaches at colleges in the US? And so that's the business that we started. And my brother runs it full time. My mom is actually his COO. And they work very closely. It's funny. It's really not a family business because it's just the two of them, but they have an incredible team of team members who are across India, Singapore, and the Philippines. And they're basically helping athletes from all of these regions get into schools in the US. And so what my brother's had to do is build a lot of relationships with coaches in the US, which he's done an incredible job of. And then he has also done an incredible job of like thinking about how to build each student's profile to make them look like an interesting candidate. And not only are they top performers, but getting into college in the US now is really hard. It's no longer...
Is soccer a thing here in the schools?
Yeah, it's huge. Soccer
I guess
is
a lot
huge...
of Brazilians will love to be part
yeah,
of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
They have great soccer players.
Yeah, you have great soccer players, definitely. And yeah, soccer is a really big sport in the US, especially to get recruited. And so, that he runs that business on a day-to-day basis and has an incredible team that's running it with him. Yeah, it's his dream, and you know they're doing an amazing job. It's obviously, you know, helping kids get into colleges. There's such a reward in the happiness that they have from getting into the college itself. You know, everyone's experience of getting to study abroad, getting to play a sport is just it's such an amazing unique experience that's very specific to the US colleges, because you actually can't, like in the UK, Australia, India, Singapore, even Brazil, I don't know if you can get selected to go to university to play a sport as well as be a student. So that's something that I think the US really has that's very unique. And yeah, my brother is running that business. So that's Added Sport. So it was turning what my brother and I, so it was actually my dad who came to the US and talked to a whole bunch of coaches to help my brother and I get into different colleges in the US. And so my brother and I basically talked about it and, you know, made it into a real business. And he has an awesome team that helps him do it.
That's awesome. I loved it. Good to learn about that. All right, so Aditi, I have a section here where I call rapid fire questions.
Oh gosh,
I basically
okay.
give you, I give you like a very simple prompt and you give me a short answer. So are you ready?
I mean, okay, let's go for it.
A trait that you value in people?
Loyalty.
Loyalty, makes sense. A city you would live in?
Paris.
Paris? Why Paris? Just curious about that.
I mean, bread, cheese, fashion.
Fair. That's enough. Wine.
Exactly.
Yeah, I love Paris too. Thaisa loves it even more.
Yeah.
yeah, my wife. And a movie you never forget.
Love Actually.
Love Actually.
Highly recommend, especially Noted. During the holidays.
Okay, I definitely need something uplifting. Best way to start a conversation.
Ask a question.
Perfect. Yes. Thank you. Loved it. Let me ask you like a very maybe stupid question, but I'm curious about this. Like my only reference of any VC presentation is Shark Tank.
Yeah.
How close it is to being a pitch with VCs to Shark Tank.
Sometimes people are like that. Sometimes it's like very bombastic characters. And so I invest less in consumer tech. So I don't do that many consumer products. I actually don't invest in consumer products very much at all. Other partners at my firm do, but I don't particularly do that. So I see less founders like that. I usually see founders who are pitching me software or either in future of work or in digital health or in fintech. And so they're less, I would say, there isn't as much of a draw. There's not as much of the drama factor as you see on Shark Tank. But sometimes people, you know, use a little bit of the theatrical moments to sort of find a better way to engage with you on video. I will say some of the video meetings I've had have been... That's funny. I haven't seen that yet, but I'm sure people have experiences. I personally haven't. Those are always pretty great.
Okay. Your job seems fun. Okay, we're getting close to the end here, and I want to make sure we have some space for you to, you know, provide like final words or anything you want to say in the last minutes.
Yeah, no, this has been awesome. I'm a huge, just for people who don't know how Koji and I know each other, I just thought I'd give a quick context. So Koji and I met when we both worked at Google on the Next Billion Users team. And I was a product manager and Koji was the head of design for us. And he is probably one of my favorite people to have ever worked with. And I'm really excited that you're doing Cells and Pixels. This is an awesome experience because, you know, I think VCs and founders spend so much time in that same ecosystem that we talk to each other a lot. But it's always fun to talk to people who are obviously in tech, but, you know, really good at what they do and specialists in their different fields. And how do we find ways to all come together and learn more about each other's jobs and what we do? So I'm really excited that I got to be on this. And yeah, if you're starting a company in the fintech space or digital health or in the future of work, reach out to me and I would love to chat.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Aditi. It's great to reconnect with you via whatever format, and for sure, like, this is very unique. I love to, you know, have the opportunity to also learn a little bit about the VC world, which to me is like very, don't have a lot of context. So it's, I think I learned a lot today. So thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you, Koji.
My name is Koji, and this is Cells and Pixels. Every Tuesdays at 5 p.m. PST, on cells.n.pixels on Instagram. Thanks for listening.